What was the famous motto during the American Revolution?
Where the hoes at? Ben Franklin. That was Ben Franklin. He said that. Sam Adams says, I love beer. Or that Brett Kavanaugh.
That was good.
You know, you didn't call these packs. I'm pretty sure it was no taxation.
Send the link.
Welcome to Send the Link, where we analyze the latest feeds and reads. I'm Brandon Harrison with my co-host, Deej Dollars. Always well-coiffed and well-groomed over there. What are you doing in the world, man? Why are you looking so good?
I don't know. I mean, you over here with massive hang time. You got your hair braided up like John Wall.
Hey, man, you know, you gotta grow and change. I never had my, braided up face.
Yeah, so. What are you using? Juices and berries, beeswax?
Juices and berries, beeswax, all the oils you could ever want. You know, I got my hair done, listeners. Dreadlocks going, as you see in our thumb pictures on the website.
Listening.
Yeah, so I was like, you know what? Twist it up for me. Do something for me, lady. She, you know, she hooked me up. So shout out to Olivia. And yeah, it's going. You know, change.
Yeah, man.
Self-care.
As black men are wont to do, I'll just leave it as just trying to get like you, man.
So how have you been this past couple of weeks?
Yeah, I think we took, last week? Last week, one of those days.
Yes.
It was my birthday. I don't know if it's a privilege for me to disclose that on the pod or not.
Yes, the previous week, DJ crossed another threshold into another year of life, signifying his wisdom and growth on this earth.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that meant no pod was going up, other things were going down. It was cool. It wasn't as raucous and event-filled as other years have been, to the dismay of a couple of my friends and family, but it was a good time nonetheless, building up to bigger and better things, do more, do better, same difference.
The voice of maturity.
Ah, yes.
So, you know, I'm just trying to, you know, do better, and, you know, just links for me, take some classes.
Yeah, yeah, you're right about that.
No, I get you, man. It's like that. It's good. It's good to grow and evolve and to change and to do things in life. So shout out to positivity here on the Send the Link podcast.
I always try to be positive. I'd be trying to be realistic, but also very positive as well.
So we're going to be positive about something that we've been normally negative about.
Yeah.
In our many dystopian, you know, grim sort of our overarching themes about the way society and its institutions crush and bewilder us little people.
Yeah, the techno dystopia.
Yeah, the techno dystopia. The
impending, that's impending at the front. The impending techno dystopia. The
current.
I was about to say, even current.
Yeah. Techno dystopia. If we were going to just banter a bit before we get into some of the heaviest stuff, because I checked out this, you know, article on Earl Thompson, The Ringer. Football. One of our prime areas of a sporting techno dystopia, but also back to that, harkening back to our prehistoric violent dystopia. It's been okay. I mean, despite some of the, you know, politics that have always existed in it, injuries, racial upheaval and strife, it seems like everyone's sort of getting the note that, like, all right, things are having to change. Things are maybe not going to be able to exist if we continue down the path we're on, especially in terms of violence and racism and things like that. It's not. Eric Reed got a job.
He did.
Strictly
football reasons, right?
Sure. I would say that. He's a safety, so it's not like he's the high profile nature of Colin Kaepernick getting a job, but hey.
That's fair.
Jimmy Garoppolo just tore his ACL, so.
Jimmy G got that contract.
But I've been trying to check in and out of this, you know. I mean, I don't know about this boycott strength, but it's been interesting as we're returning to sports after the summer. So,
yeah, as you know, I'm on my bullshit weak stomached boycott, particularly spurred on by past events related to the NFL, and also most principally, to be honest, the Giants are trash once again. So,
Shout out to Eli.
Shout out to Eli.
He's earned
age.
It, right? He's earned just wasting years
of his
other people's.
You know, shout out to the bewildered look on his face every time he gets up from getting knocked down or sacked.
Shout out to him crumbling and refusing to, like, run or scramble or fight.
Shout out to the O-line. Shout out to the young rookie, Saquon Barkley. for scrambling in the backyard as best as he can, only to be tackled for a negative 1 yard loss, with the occasional burst into the open field. But once again, it doesn't look too good for the squad. Who do you usually root for?
Well, I'm an Eagles fan.
Oh, that's why you're very well. Actually, Eagles are like what, 1-3?
They're 2-2. I mean, it happens. But you know, as a fair weather football follower, anyway,
right?
As someone who is pulled back from actually knowing anything that's really going on with the sport, I'm like, it'll be all right. I'm fine. I'm not. No, I mean, it for gambling purposes and meme purposes. So I'm just all over this Pat Mahomes bandwagon because I'm like, oh,
Pat Mahomes. He's already a young legend.
I mean, I've seen. I mean, if you're out there playing any sort of fantasy sports of any sort,
yeah,
it's pretty amazing. And so, see what the next Aaron Rodgers does. And he's also got a great Kermit memes with him drinking the tea with his little Mahomes curl. They put the little curl on top of Kermit's head.
Yeah, man. So, I mean, and it's a fun time. Chiefs still have the best jerseys. They're the most photogenic team. At least to me.
Yeah, and they're, their annual hot start. So we'll see what the...
Yeah, man, shout out to Andy Reid. Shot down to Andy Reid in the playoffs. But we'll see how that goes with the second-year quarterback. I guess it goes to show you that line of thinking still has a bit of merit, right? In terms of sitting your first-round pick quarterback for a year, let him grow in the role, understand the ropes of the league, get a bit of familiarity. And then... a year or so in, you really are comfortable and able to step into that role. Last year, the Chiefs had Alex Smith, who is probably, the most serviceable quarterback of all time?
Yes, he is serviceable.
Like, shout out to him. And they
was that Matt Ryan? I'm sorry.
Nah, Matt Ryan is better than that.
Oh, because Matt Ryan is mediocre to me. Regular. He's a B+.
B+, yeah. Alex Smith is a B.
He's B-.
B minus, damn cold. Nonetheless, Mahomes stepped into it this year after they jettisoned Alex Smith for him to go to the Redskins, I believe.
Yes.
And Mahomes is setting the league on fire. The boy can scramble. He throws the ball on the rope. He's had all these exciting games, none of which I've actually even really watched. Only a couple highlights. The only thing that really is keeping me in is, for the first time in years... my fantasy team is actually doing pretty well, surprisingly so. I pulled it out last night, won by about 8 points after Travis Kelce scored a touchdown, so it was lit.
You know you're living a good life when your fantasy team is doing well. It's like, hey, this is fun. It's usually just like, oh, this is something I don't pay attention to, but now it's just like, all right, this is... If you get like 3-4 weeks in and you're not like completely under the eight ball, it's like, oh, this is a fun side activity to do.
Yeah. Looking for the next good pickup. I keep missing out on... Remember I think I told you before, I picked up like a lot of old Wash players.
This is your knowledge, yeah, like behind. Knowledge.
So I picked up DeSean Jackson, and he's actually doing well this
year.
And I haven't started him one time. So.
It's like, oh, wait a minute, I have to change... Oh, Dags, too late.
He got 50 points, shit.
Oops.
We're going to the next week. So maybe he'll get in the lineup. Next week, what was it?
I mean, it's no biggie, man. I understand. I'm right with you with this whole like keeping up with this stuff because I guess we've got more harrowing and important things to worry about than what's going on. And
you could say that. I mean,
they say it's sports is an escape.
Yeah, sports entertainment is a good distraction, but obviously became kind of heavy when football was part of the national controversy as well. It seemed as if all of their Also, at the same time, it seems as if all of their scandals and systemic issues as a league came to a head all last year around the same time. And for whatever reason, maybe just for the sake of timing.
Additionally, the games were trash too.
Yeah, and the games were trash as well. There have been a couple more exciting games, although several trash games as well. It just looks like they just got off to a better start as a league, the energy... to their credit, not really to mine, obviously, like the Kaepernick controversy per the league hasn't really clouded it too much. Donald Trump is not tweeting about the NFL too much. And I just saw the other day that their ratings actually doing well.
Oh.
So.
You hear that, Roger Goodell? You enjoy that, sir.
You and your $44 million a year.
Pillsbury Doughman looking.
Yeah, printing money. So, I mean, I don't want to shout out the NFL, but, you know, they're there.
They're all right, you know.
Shout out to my fantasy team.
I mean.
Intentional pounding.
Intentional pounding?
Yes.
I don't know how I feel about that.
Intentional grounding, intentional pounding.
I don't know. I feel like it's a little rated X there. I don't know. Something about really? That. I don't like it.
I don't know. It's in a PC type of league. It's in a work league. So I didn't want to go, you know, extra hard.
I don't know. Somebody was probably like, I don't know about this one. How about this? Week one and done. Yeah.
Week one and done.
Yeah.
One and done makes me think of basketball.
Yeah. It's not totally there, but that's how much attention I usually give to my fantasy team. I want everyone to know that up front.
Hold that to your NBA fantasy as well.
NBA fantasy was that.
But shit, I can't wait for them to abolish that rule as well. So soon come.
So all humor and laughs aside, we're talking about all of our dystopian pillars, the NFL, Amazon, other huge conglomerates and Uber. You know, Uber, probably some kind of a weird disease or something. One of these other things that are just in the bucket of dystopia. We always have to come back to, and if I have to give my Republicans their credit for this one, dystopian government overreach. You know, communism, those futures where everything is like gray for some reason. There's some overlord smashing like a hammer or something. Yeah. Yeah, gavel. Just like that image of like the government taking over everything. We're all sort of siloed and suffering. Apparently, slickly, if you haven't noticed, it's happening in Florida. Because if you live in this state, which I have lived in before, and as my co-host as well.
Short period of time.
There's a lot of shady things that just go on in the way it functions under the auspices of it being a paradise.
Yeah, I thought, don't we agree like that Florida is the worst state? Is that fair?
You know, I don't like the word worst because there's a lot of criteria that come into worst. I would say corrupt.
I would say
belying its great natural resources to be a cesspool of poorly managed government and insane people.
Yeah.
But if you're rich, I mean, honestly, it's a Republican paradise.
Yeah, newlywed, nearly dead.
Hey, listen, you get land.
Land.
Weather. And
hurricanes.
Hurricanes. But also, if you want to sequester yourself from the poor and disenfranchised, there's probably no better place to do it in America than Florida.
I feel like Wyoming is screaming at you right now.
Yeah, but no one wants to live in Wyoming. You can buy beachfront property, and no one can ever bother you and come into your property, and you can shoot them.
You probably know Florida better than I do, but the reason I say it's the worst, generally speaking, colloquially speaking, is not because of any one thing, but I feel like it could just be so much better, and every crazy story comes from out of Florida for whatever reason.
It's disappointing.
It's disappointing. That's all I'm saying. It's not because it's actually the worst. Florida is honestly fire. We both know that. Not to live per se, but, you know, Miami.
It's warm.
Tampa Bay, St. Pete. They apparently have the best beaches, according to
Beach.com.
TripAdvisor per the advertisement I saw on the subway a couple months ago. So it's all lit there. You know, you got Jacksonville. Jaguars doing well.
Jacksonville.
Huh. Smells weird, yeah. Apparently. Huh.
Do that in there, huh? Do that in the pod, Jacksonville. All right.
I don't know. I'm in Central Florida.
I got plenty of Central Duval Florida. County.
Orlando.
Yeah.
Disney.
It's there. You got
Busch Gardens.
Yeah. Orange groves.
Oranges.
Alligators.
Gators. Go Gators. University of Florida, my favorite corrupt sports program. So it's all lit. Until you peel back the veil and actually see the power structures at hand, right? So I think that's what you were leading us into.
Indeed.
Particularly the first feed. We have an
Emily
Bazelon piece.
Bazelon, thank you.
Coming out of the New York Times Magazine, titled, "Will Florida's Ex-Felons Finally Regain the Right to Vote?
Question mark.
Now, Florida is not the only state that forbids felons that have done their time to have the ability to vote. It's just that they are by far the largest state to have that in place in such a rigid manner. You also have states like Virginia, I know for a fact, and I think Kentucky and handful of other states, they either don't allow it outright or have certain restrictions to do so, or you have to jump through hoops just to get your right to vote back. So just to make that clear, you follow?
Yeah, I'm with you.
All right, cool. So ask me, Brandon, how did this come about?
So DJ, I'm really curious. Could you let me know how this came about?
Yeah, like why can't felons vote?
I was under the impression that, you know, felons, once they serve their time, they then could be reintegrated back into society.
Yeah, you think that they're citizens still.
Yes.
You know, they still pay taxes.
Of America.
Still pay taxes, right?
And of Florida.
What was the famous motto during the American Revolution?
Where the hoes at? Ben Franklin. That was Ben Franklin. He said that. Sam Adams says, I love beer. Or that Brett Kavanaugh.
That was good.
You know, you didn't call these packs. I'm pretty sure it was no taxation without representation.
You would think. Now, I may be a dilettante at this, but I feel like that still applies, right? That's the one thing that I can always scale back to. Is like, you know what? I feel like my say has a bit of sway just because I pay my fucking taxes. And if you're a felon, you still pay your taxes. I still can't get over this, even after I read this article. So I'm like, these motherfuckers pay, they go, you know, buy a pack of bubble gum, they pay taxes on it, but they can't really vote on how those resources are used in their own community, which is just crazy to me.
Well, I mean, we're talking about two different things. I know you're just using an analogy here.
Uh-huh.
I almost kind of like...
You were still thinking about like where the hoes at?
No. That wasn't what I was thinking about. I was thinking about climbing up on my soapbox of paying a sales tax. I don't think it's your right to vote, but I think you're just using an analogy there. I get it.
No,
you can tax on your income. You can tax on anything.
Yeah, that was an anecdotal one.
Yeah.
It's particularly fine. Your income.
I was almost like, you know, excuse me.
Yeah, not
are you a homeowner, sir?
not the state income tax that doesn't exist in Florida, but even your federal income tax, Social Security, that whole not. Those still come out of people's Floridians' checks. And those... I'm sure there are plenty of successful Floridians that committed a, for example, a theft of something that cost $301, which would qualify as
grand,
a felony.
Grand larceny.
I guess that may be the title, but that would qualify as a felony in Florida, thus meaning you lose your right to vote.
Can I give you this nugget from the article?
Mm-hmm.
Just for, if... Somehow,
I didn't answer your question, by the way, but go ahead.
You know what? I'm interrupting you then.
I interrupted myself.
I was going to just say that apparently, like, this whole right to vote issue, like, it literally has the most ever potential voters hanging in the balance.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
It's just insane to me.
Right. No, so, okay. So, your original question was, how did this come to be?
Yes.
So where Floridians that have committed felonies cannot vote.
We're going to hop in the Wayback Machine right now.
Yeah, hopping back. Okay. Back on course. And the short answer is, what would you expect? Racism.
Dun, 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 dun. The white man.
Right. So, if I read it correctly, basically shortly after, well, let's frame it like this. The actions taken by the southern states, Florida in this case, run along that same outline of what we understand of the Reconstruction era and the white backlash that came after the Reconstruction era that brought along the Black Codes and Jim Crow era, so on and so forth. Florida is not usually imagined to be part of that deep South type of vibe with your Alabamas and Mississippis and Georgias or whatever, but they're right with them. You know, the weather was just a little nicer there. More alligators.
And even just people to understand that, back in the day, going to history books, Florida wasn't Florida as it is today because it was basically only the north of Florida because no one lived in the south because it was a desolate, horrid mosquito swamp.
Yeah.
So that's why it's even the capital's even in Tallahassee. Like, why would it be up there? Because that's the only place where people lived at that point in time.
Yeah, good call. So without going into all of the quite facts of this, but essentially in... If I read this correctly, the 1868 Florida Constitutional Convention deemed things such as petty larceny and theft and burglary, things of that nature, felonies. and used relatively small minor crimes as a wide net to cast disproportionately numbers. Well, basically to cast a wide net that would encompass a disproportionate amount of black people to not only go to jail and then participate in, you know, like prison labor, which was big at the time, but also to be deemed felons. And after that point, felons would lose their right to vote. And that just continued to snowball to where they just continually added different crimes to the felony list. And always just had that black and white rule that if you were to commit a felony and live in Florida, you just lose your right to vote. That continued for literally over 100 years, up until the past decade or two, principally starting with Charlie Crist, who was a Republican governor at the time. And he basically used his gubernatorial powers by fiat to magically make ex-felons to give them the ability to vote.
As sort of this, you know, I am going to benevolently do this for you.
Right, because it was ridiculous. I'm pretty sure a lot of people complained about it. Black people started to gain a bit more autonomy. There were more sympathetic people out there. This happened in the late aughts. The current governor, Rick Scott.
A.K.A.
Where were you going? Salamander?
No, Snake God.
Snake God, right. He came in and revamped the process to make it much more convoluted and difficult for people to receive, to get their voting privileges back. Or voting rights back, rather. And compared to Crist, who basically restored the voting rights for about 150,000 people. Rick Scott, the numbers aren't really clear on that. But to give you an example of his process, you are the person that had committed a felony, did your time, you're out. And
help me, sir. I've done my time.
Right. So now you have to jump through hoops and physically have a meeting, sit down with Rick Scott, the governor, and three of his cabinet officials to review and discuss whether you should be giving back your voting rights.
I have the number when you're ready.
Okay, what's the number? 10 people.
Well, not quite 10. A little but, more. But almost 10% of the other number.
15,000
I'm sorry. Almost 3%. we had, it was 150,000 from Charlie Crist, and we have about 3,200 people from Mr. Rick Scott.
And Rick Scott's been the governor for two terms now. So, and as you can imagine, if you have to do these in-person, face-to-face meetings with someone as busy as the governor of a large state, it would stand to reason that you're probably going to have to wait a long time. And a lot of people have been in the queue and have not been able to get their hearing. So, just a bad process. Florida is a very large state, one of the largest in the union. It's a swing state in which the presidential race has been decided by a margin of 1.5 basis points or 1.5% or less over the past couple of presidential elections. So when it comes to there, things are decided on the razor's edge. And this could really sway that because there are about 1.5 million felons in Florida, which is a lot of fucking people.
Which is like literally like what around 10, like what is the percent of that? It's like it's more than 10%.
I don't even know the Florida population, but that's a lot. That's
Florida's gonna have at least 20 million people, right?
Yeah, I would imagine.
So like
that's a lot of fucking people.
That's crazy.
It's a lot of people. A lot of people that could, and those are all adults as well, right? It's not like, you know, when we're counting people,
right,
we count literally everybody.
Children and everything.
Yeah, this is like 1.5 adults that just would have the ability to vote, but don't. So that would count for a lot. The story shows the dynamic of it, of which two people of, honestly, probably two different political persuasions and backgrounds are driving the effort. One, this guy, I believe his name is like Ed Volz, who had been a lobbyist, who had been a Republican lobbyist associated with Jack Abramoff, who participated in this massive fraud in Washington in which a lot of people got locked up, including this guy. He came out a bit reformed, although still conservative, joined a non-denominational church, but basically came to find out that he literally couldn't vote in the state. And he's like, damn, this is fucked up, regardless of whatever your political persuasion is. So he joined up with a larger effort spearheaded by this black man. I forgot his name. Do you know?
Was Desmond Mead?
Desmond Mead. There you go. So he's been at this for quite some time. He's started to get a lot of national media attention on a variety of outlets, whether from like articles like this or on television, in which he has gotten a law degree, you know, is rather successful and a good spokesman for this, and also and is a felon as well. And his main, you know, just speech pattern is like, yo, I did my time. I'm not trying to be a productive citizen. What's the deal? And there are a lot of people like me. And there's also a bit of like a religious evangelical Christian aspect to it that resonates with a lot of evangelicals or like larger cohort of white people, religious types of second chances and forgiveness of doing your public service, which has resonated with a lot of people in the state, to where at least the polls as of now have the support for this measure under the name of, what is it, Proposition 4, I think?
Yes, Proposition 4.
Right.
Prop 4.
Yeah, that will be part of the ballot in the November 6th elections coming up later this year. But yeah, it has support like in the 70 percentile, because this seems pretty reasonable when you break it down to brass tacks, especially if you look at least for somebody like me, you look at the historical significance of it and see that it was really just bred in racism. So yeah, I mean, it's actually a very, very important thing. It could be one large package deal in terms of the like the vote right now in Florida coming up. You have for governor, you have Rick Scott, who had no. It's I'm sorry.
It's DeSantis.
What's his name? Ron DeSantis.
Maybe, yes.
Ron. Who's a Trump stooge, pretty much running totally on the Trump line. Versus Andrew Gillum, a black progressive FAMU graduate who had been mayor of Tallahassee for the past couple of years. Both of them vying for the governorship of Florida. It looks like Andrew Gillum is winning. Well, right now he's leading in the polls by like less than the margin of error. So it'll be a pretty tight race. Then you have for senator, Bill Nelson versus the...
Of course, the aforementioned.
Good boy, Rick Scott. And that's a tight race as well.
Trying to take his shedding skin to Washington, D.C.
And and on the back of that ballot, there are usually these ballot initiatives that either speak to a constitutional, like state constitutional amendment, or some type of collective legislation that they want to have on the ballot to see if people support it or not. That happens in pretty much all the elections. Like, I'm not sure if people really flip over their ballot, but there are always propositions going on of varying degrees of importance. But in this case, this is pretty big. I would imagine most Floridians are familiar with it, although we're pretty far away in the Northeast in Brooklyn.
Florida, get familiar.
This is a pretty big thing. There doesn't seem to be an organized resistance or like anti-prop for initiative out there right now. Even networks such as like the Koch boys, Koch brothers, conservative groups.
Falling back a little.
They've fallen back and haven't really put any money towards going against this. So we'll see if it goes. I mean, really, it's just the point of if people put forward an initiative to, one, go vote, and two, to turn over their ballot paper and actually... pick yay or nay regarding the initiative. But I really don't see a reason why not. But I could tell you the cynical reason why not. But
well, I mean, okay.
What do you think thus far?
I was going to think that you're going to go with some sort of racist element. But, I mean, I don't know. From what I was reading, it seems like a lot of these people are white anyway. I don't know if I really want to totally dive into that. I mean, I could see there could be some sort of exterior, like... political operative situation when they're trying to, like, I don't know, purge people or some kind of thing, prevent people from going to polls.
It casts a very wide net. Like, all since every and any little thing in Florida is deemed a felony, of course, disproportionately affected black people. But that means a lot of white folks were getting, you know, deemed as felons as well. So you have, out of that 1.5 million felons, I think the majority are black. I have to go back and check on that.
I think it was the majority were white. It was a higher percentage of black people. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. I read this other day. So thanks for filling me in. Yeah. So actually, the majority of them are white, but obviously disproportionately black, which means, you know, maybe like 40% of them are black, so on and so forth. Anyway, the cynical reason not to support this, if you were from either side, particularly the Republican side, is just based on there's not a lot of data points out there that can really make sense of this, but there's a good chance that the majority of those people, of those listed felons, particularly the black ones, would vote Democrat. And for in a state in which all of the elections are so hotly contested and come down literally to a handful of votes, if you remember, supposedly they didn't, the anecdote to that is they didn't count all the votes, but if you remember, George Bush won Florida by like 537 votes.
It was something super low. It's crazy.
Yeah, literally 537 votes. There are probably more than 500 people in this building we're in right now. So, yeah, it really comes down to that. So if you imagine if you add more Democrats to that, and that could really tip the scales of the state going forward for generations. So that's the cynical play, but that's kind of extremely cynical, right? And it's difficult to message that in public, maybe behind the scenes, but that's just like a different...
It's not something that if you are some sort of Republican operative you're going to come out with, if you want your, I guess, candidates to say it. Like, no one's going to openly say that. So it's a little hard to manifest that out in the open. So I guess, is this optimism?
Mm-hmm.
Huh. All right.
Yeah, so it's weird. Yeah.
Shout out to optimism. We don't get that a lot in this podcast.
Yeah, they have to get, what is it, 60 or 70% of all of the ballots to approve for a constitutional amendment in the state, which is a lot.
I mean, that's basically like a quorum and kind of like voting situation with like legislatures. It's pretty much damn near impossible. But
well, it's, okay, so to circle back, yeah, like any change to Florida's constitution, Amendment 4 needs 60% of the vote to pass. So maybe, I mean, if you get pretty much all the Dems to support it and a large minority of the Republicans to support it, then it might work.
You got to remember, how angry are white people?
Pretty, well, angry, or if you use a different word, how much are they willing to hold on to their power? You know, we'll see.
It's 30% of the vote, right?
Yeah, I mean, it encompasses a lot of, it covers it paints it with a wide brush. If everything is deemed a felony out there, then they're just going to make, then everybody's just going to wind up being a fucking felon. It's pretty bad. So, it's an interesting thing. I hope it goes through. I really have difficulty time processing how this makes any sense, or even how it could be, like, how it stands up to law. Like, I don't know if there's ever really been, like, a real constitutional challenge to this.
I mean, I hope not. I hope it comes through and there's no sort of, like, finagling about...
No, I mean, like, constitutional challenge to, oh, you're Joe Schmo, you're a felon, and you can't vote. Like, what does that mean?
And what does that mean if it goes through and then we move up into maybe some kind of federal or thing situation? I don't know. Interesting.
Yeah, but this is like on a state-to-state basis, so I guess federalism wins out from there.
Oh, federalism. Would you say this goes through, your opinion on this great state, the great sunshine state of Florida, would change to some extent?
It would. It would. Because I think the politics we have right now is not actually representative of the country. And that's not just anecdotal to Florida, but that's like literally everywhere. There are a lot of systemic and like not even inequalities. There are like systemic disadvantages, particularly to Democratic candidates right now. Like, for example, Democrats have consistently over the past couple of years won more votes for House of Representatives candidates. Yep. But they don't. But like the way the geometry is set up,
one less land.
Yeah, the way the geometry is set up. I'm talking about just for the House in particular, right now. The way the geometry is set up, despite them doing that, they don't get the majority of the House seats. So even this year, when it's close to 100% that they're going to get more votes than the Republicans, they have to win by a margin of like 7 to 8 percentage points across the U.S. to even get the majority of the seats in the House of Representatives. You see what I'm saying? Like, you just gave me like a blank stare. Like, it's, that's fucked up. Can you hear me now?
No, keep going.
Yeah. Good.
Move your foot.
Move my foot?
Lift that foot up.
Lifting it up. Lifting your foot up.
No, I just had a buzzing. I was trying to remember what was buzzing.
All right.
Okay.
Buzzing.
Stop buzzing. All right.
Yeah, it may have been my foot on the court. So you have that, and then you have the Senate, which is grotesquely unequal. You know, you have two senators from California.
I mean, designed that way.
You always bring up, what was that, New Jersey, Wisconsin compromise or some
shit? New Jersey, Connecticut, I think. New Jersey, Connecticut compromise.
I say fuck that. First,
I mean, I agree, but it's not like it wasn't a plan like by the Republicans to do. It's just
no, I know. And neither, well, actually.
Listeners, yes. Do you know, though?
The House of Reps thing, actually, yeah, that was mischievously done, gerrymandering on purpose. But the Senate thing is not. And, I mean, I guess you just have to make a better political message, I guess, to win a seat, you know, when Wyoming or something. I don't know, but that it just seems weird. There are two senators from California and also two senators from Rhode Island, no matter who they are.
You can drive through Rhode Island in 45 minutes.
You can.
No reason they need two senators.
You might. Shit, Patrick Mahomes could throw a fucking pass over over Wyoming. Probably. Run to the other side and catch that shit. So, yeah. So, there are real things on the ballot. A lot of shit is on the line, as we all know, based on the political climate. We all just want checks and balances and for the system to work a little better than it is now. So, I have a couple of homies in Florida. I've already hit them up and admonished them.
They're going to vote.
Put my foot in their ass. Getting them to vote.
I mean, can we move to some, like, corruption and an evil that's more close to home?
Always.
To the great city state. I'm gonna call it a city state like it's fucking Sumer or something from the textbooks.
What else is a city state? Athens?
Athens. Sparta.
Troy.
Where's my man Hannibal from? Oh. Phoenicia or some shit. No, Carthage. Phoenician.
Carthage.
Carthage.
Yeah, I always love that name.
It's lit, right?
Yeah. But they got destroyed by the Romans, which is like not
I mean, lit. You know, not the first time.
Yeah. Wipe the fuck out. That was the damn, what's the name of those wars?
Shout out to the Peloponnesian
Wars. Peloponnesian Wars.
Yeah. Part 3. Great movie. yeah. So to talk about, you know, our great city state of New York City and its favorite and most despicable son and all the dealings of the legacy of the Trump family.
I'm not surprised that we went above and beyond and produced like quite possibly the worst person in the country.
You think about it, right? It's just like there's some things that happen. I'm like, yo, like I get upset, but I'm also like, he's still like so hilariously New York. It's funny, like I can almost forget it. But
Donald Trump,
yes, Donald Trump. We've known about his shiftlessness, his grift, his general shadiness. There's clearly for anyone who's got eyes and you know. Can perceive, you know, he's full of shit. And we've known this politically, but also clearly as he would not like us to know or be apparent to the people that look into him and to pass his veneer, I'd say, is that his own personal business dealings and life is also shady and shallow. as is his political affiliation. And we've stayed away.
Or rather murky. You say shallow or murky?
Well, shallow and murky. Right. Yeah. All right. That's, I don't know what that is. That's like a, you know, some food coloring in there, just blocking the view.
Yeah,
okay. We've stayed away from, you know, talking too much day-to-day politics. I feel like we used to do that a lot on this podcast.
Yeah, particularly Trump politics, because, I mean, we all know what it is.
We know the deal.
I don't want people to check out fully, but you know what it is. Just go
vote, please. We know the deal. When November comes, you got to do what you're supposed to do. But I felt like it was a good point to sort of step back in and dip the toe in this article. So let's, first of all, big shout out to, I guess, the whole team, because
this is a team effort.
It was pretty beastly. But the authors, David Barstow, Suzanne Craig, Russ Buettner? Buettner.
I feel like it's Buettner.
Buettner?
I like Buettner.
Russ Buettner, for this special investigation into Donald Trump's and the Trump family at large and their history into their general evasiveness, financial invasiveness, mm-hmm. and blatant tax fraud. The Trump engaged in suspect tax schemes as he reaped riches from his father. This posted today. It is long.
Shout out to you for even digging into this. I bookmarked it. I haven't been able to get to it.
My shovel, I was like, I'm going to dig into it. I started, honestly, I got about 77% the way through.
That's well past passing.
I will say
you know the gist.
You know, even though I don't believe in 77s, if you get a B minus, you failed in my eyes, because that means you were below average. Why would I want to fuck with you?
Yeah, B minus is just not a lit grade.
It's honestly the worst grade. Because if you get, you know, less than, if you get like a C, then you didn't have to try. You was like, I didn't even try this shit. I passed. I'm good. B minus is like you thought about it and you're still trash. But this amount of detail. To get 77% way through this, it's impressive because it's through not only personal records, the records of Trump family, Fred Trump, we're talking about mortgages, deeds, tax records, all state filings through the New York State Attorney General's office, people that were allowed to investigate him on a state level. So this allowed them to get into sort of his personal finances and family finances through all the things that Fred Trump did growing up. Well, not growing up, but like building his businesses in New York and Brooklyn and Queens and the outer mm-hmm. boroughs. Mm-hmm. So, DJ, if I would like to take a second to ask you a question. What is the big claim that Trump made when he started his business? Like, how did he start it?
It's always been ironic, but in short, he took a $1 million investment from his father and turned it into a $10 billion empire.
Hey, man.
Yeah.
It's just a start. $1 billion to $10 billion. I mean,
$1 million to $10 billion.
Exactly. Like the flip on that.
Strong flip.
I mean, come on. This guy's got to have some hustle. I wouldn't call it an article because it's like an improbable breakdown with like copies of tax records and tax returns from Fred Trump from the 1990s and things like that shows that Fred Trump, Donald Trump's father, had set up numerous trusts for his sibling, for his children, and over the course of their youth had been, which is like not wrong mm-hmm. as a parent, but had made them owners in various buildings and businesses he had.
Rich people shit.
Rich people shit. And he was just banking money ever since he was born, to the point where in high school, Donald Trump was getting at least $17,000 a year as landlords to build like buildings, like per building, or just buildings that his name was placed on as a landlord. So there's all these different buildings that Fred Trump had, businesses that maybe not even, the buildings didn't even exist, just plots that they're getting money from. Not only Donald Trump, but the rest of the Trump siblings. So just this initial claim that his $1 million loan was this start of this business is patently false.
Right.
But even that, after Trump moved out into the world when, I guess this was after he graduated Wharton. So he had to be his early 20s when he supposedly got that loan. Fred Trump had done that for the remainder of Donald Trump's life until he died in 1999.
What do you mean, giving him like $1 million?
Just giving him millions of dollars here and there, and all the siblings just giving them money, floating his casino, going into the Trump's casino and doing fake just bets.
Buying a bunch of chips.
Just buying a bunch of chips, yeah. And just giving him loans that he was just obviously not going to pay back. And then as he aged and became older and was suffering from dementia and things like that, they started a company to basically obscure all of Fred Trump's holdings so he could move all his millions of dollars up to the point where he's worth $190 million himself, mm-hmm, to Trump, to Donald, and the rest of the siblings. I'm sorry, I had the name here. But it was basically a holding company, mm-hmm, well, that was supposed to be a purchasing company for all of the buildings. So Fred Trump owned all these buildings. This company was supposedly going to buy boilers and buy, I don't know, things that buildings need, new bricks, new things. There was a holding company that was supposed to do these various
property
tasks.
Management.
Property management, yeah, arm of the Trump organization, which literally did none of that stuff. It was just a company that had all the children's names on it that made fake receipts for things they didn't buy.
Wow.
And just used that to say, oh, we can raise the rent on some of these properties because we're incurring all these costs. Mm-hmm. Or we can write off all these business costs off on our taxes, even though it literally did nothing.
Okay, so did he... So were they ever prosecuted for this fraud? Or is this just coming to light now?
Like, quote, in this fashion? In practice, though gift tax returns get a little scrutiny from the IRS, it's open secret that among tax practitioners that evasion of taxes is rampant and rarely prosecuted.
Indeed.
They understood that not only were they not going to get prosecuted, but if they managed to stay sort of a step ahead of what was going on with IRS, that they wouldn't get prosecuted. And upon Fred's death, all of his assets, which were valued, as I said, $190 million at that point, mm-hmm, were, I think, it says $41 million they paid taxes on from the $190 million.
Right, from like a death tax, right?
Yeah, from his estate taxes.
Estate tax, yeah.
So Donald has been living this life. And another point that the article makes, which I find hilarious, is that all of the children were sort of treated equally up until a certain point when Fred realized that Donald had a certain speed of spending that he needed to be kept up with. So a lot of the money started to be moved more toward Donald's way. Mm, even upon...
Like gold toilets and shit.
Right. Okay. So even upon towards the point where Fred was aging and they were trying to figure out what they were going to do, Donald was trying to move more of the assets into his pocket from the other siblings there. So Fred Trump's tax return on the ones that he gave the gifts of these apartments to, mm-hmm, his children, 25 apartment complexes, 6,988 apartments. This is, which is twice the floor space of the Empire State Building, $41 million. This is absurd. I know y'all broke boys out there don't know how much that's worth, but 2004, a valuation of that, $900 million on that real estate. And they paid taxes on $41 million. So the Trump family, mm-hmm, is a family that they do it together. I'm sure right now I saw the pictures of these events, the Mexico trade deal, the other thing that Trump was announcing. Jared and Ivanka back there, ha, 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 just in the picture, laughing. Maybe. The nepotism. It's a historical, familial thing that's beyond just, oh, Donald is a shady guy. It's organizational. One thing that people have started to point out is that they're not dumb. They're just, I'm going to say, they're capable of doing what they do, and they know what they're doing. It's not them being political. It's not about a lot of the shady business practices that they do.
Yeah, this actually, his foray into politics has actually been counterproductive to his family business, I would say, because a lot of this stuff is being investigated and brought into light. Definitely no offense to you and as you were reading it, but all of this shit sounds in a bad way, and in the way that we've just been conditioned to this, but all this shit sounds trite and par for the course for rich people in New York City.
Pretty much.
From what I've come to understand from like Adam Davidson, New Yorker pieces, and all this investigatory journalism is that, well, this kind of definitely blows the lid off of him coming into these tens of millions of dollars while lying about his so-called come-up story. But is that, okay, he's had this institutional family wealth, but actually has not really done well at business to the point where, this is a different anecdote to what you mentioned, but he's had to do all of these ridiculous kind of penny-ante deals across the world over the past decade or so.
Because, in Russia.
Right. Russia, Azerbaijan, I think Malaysia, like old Soviet bloc countries with authoritarian, corrupt...
that just give him money for his name. Like,
yeah, dictators that... Yeah, just exactly, just give him the money for the name. And he's doing this because he's running him personally. He's running those companies poorly. So with the money that he has up to this point, it's not going particularly well. But that doesn't mean that he and his family are not sitting on, you know, like real just institutional generational wealth that has allowed him to live his lifestyle for this long while kind of bullshitting, bullshitting actually how much money he has and how much money he's made and also how much money he's been given or is given every other year from whatever trust that was in his name. But all this shit is just kind of par for the course. It was just that he should have never gotten into politics in the first place. And this was all just a vanity play in the first place.
I find it hilarious. Just the thing I take away from this article the most, because you're right. We expect these things. But the funniest thing that I expected and got is that, of course, the Fred Trump empire starts on government subsidies for builders and all these things like that. And just to have these people then obviously pull away from that as soon as they get, all right, cool, we got our leg up with the government. Let's take away and siphon these things. Let's raise the value on our properties in our places through fraud. Let's kick out certain kinds of renters because they're minorities and they're poor. It's hilarious. It's hilariously dark. And it brings me back to the dystopia that we've come to live in even more.
Yeah, we're like on the extremes, we're kind of live amongst or live run by these type of people. Do you want to live in the super clean New York City where, you know, large chunks of these high rises in Midtown are not owned by Russian oligarchs?
Chinese oligarchs.
Chinese as well. Shout out to the Chinese. That are adding to the tax base of the city itself. Maybe not. I would say no, but I mean, it's just a funny quandary that we find ourselves in because our law enforcement have explicitly decided to dedicate their resources to chasing petty thieves and drug dealers compared to people that avoid paying hundreds of millions of dollars in taxes over years. Like, that just shows where the priorities are, that shows where the power bases are. That makes perfect sense. And honestly, especially the way Donald Trump handles this shit, and from all that I read, he's not really good at this. It seems, I guess, his dad and the people around him and his family probably had a better handle of this shit. But there are people that are handling it much better, much better.
Oh yeah,
people in New York handling this shit way better than he and his family did. Trust me, all those papers that come out on occasion, Panama Papers and all of that.
These motherfuckers in there coasting. Yeah. Not even getting into it.
Those show you the real schemes at hand. You know, there are people that speculate Vladimir Putin is the richest person in the world just because he has his hand in every single major operation in Russia. You know, but you're not going to see that. It's because he or his associates have these holding companies that's under a name, and it's redirected to this way and that way. So, the web is intentionally meant to be obscure and to get people tangled up or to get the authorities tangled up to the point where they're just like, you know what? Fuck it. We're just going to fall back and worry about, you know, MS-13 or whatever the fuck, like the national outrages of the day.
Can we end this on a query that we sort of discussed pre-pod?
Pre-pod.
Must be good to be rich, man. It must be good to so that, like, between yeah, this Trump thing and this Kavanaugh, I'm just thinking about just like the weird web of the connections that you meet that are willing to put you in a place where you are beyond reproach, and then the entitlement that that gives you. It's really interesting. You know, get to hang out with Chris Dudley.
Yeah, there are different level, different versions, different levels to it. To the New York real estate profile is a very specific
that's
type.
Tier. That's
that
kind of,
that's pretty tier. Lit. It's a specific kind of person. Although the Trumps don't own too much ultra prime Manhattan real estate. I mean, there are different categories of it. You have your Washington, you know, rich people, insider types. You have the agrarian overlords that live in Iowa and shit. Where billions
on our food issue.
Yeah, you know, so there are different versions of it. I don't particularly envy rich people per se, but yeah, to have that amount of power is definitely interesting. But I will say on the last note, I think I'm actually pretty sure of it. I think Trump doing all that he's done, becoming president and being the president that he has been, such a divisive figure, and so reviled by the quote-unquote elites, is going to be, has a good chance to be the worst decision that he's made. Because I think once he's out of office, New York City as a whole, the liberal bashing that it is, even with all the lawyers and the, you know, Southern District of New York and the New York Attorney General, you know, all that stuff is going to remain blue, if not relatively moderate,
like,
for the near future. They're going to be on his ass and his family's ass for the near future going forward. I'm pretty sure of that. I feel like there are things that at least New York State itself and New York City itself would like to do right now, but they can't because he's the president. But once he's the president, these people out here are very upset, like those of us here, and they're not going to fucking care that he was the president because you're not the president anymore. And he and his organization committed dozens upon dozens of crimes. And maybe or maybe not that the state let them slide or the feds let them slide. But that's not going to happen after he's out of office. It may not come directly onto his body and his autonomy. He may not go to jail. But the Trump organization and all of that, they're going to run through a lot of problems.
Yeah, man.
I'm pretty sure of that. And I feel like there hasn't been, and for valid reasons, because there are more pressing issues at hand. But there hasn't been a lot of talk about that. Like, once he's out of office, son, they're going to be on his ass. I'm telling you. Like,
yeah, man. That's why
they're gonna be on
his he's ass. Never leaving.
That's why he's never leaving. He's going to go for the dictator route.
Shout to the dictatorship.
He's going for the authoritarian route. I don't know. People don't like him enough. I don't know. The Republicans don't even like him enough. They're going to kill him or something like that.
Yeah, but they got to do it.
Got to do it. I mean, Mitch McConnell has balls. I give him that. But, yeah, man, that's just a funny thing to pontificate on. It's just like, yo, once he's out, I'm pretty sure about this. They're going to be on his ass. They're gonna be like, oh, Trump organization subpoenaed for all of their records.
Tell me Trump ain't going to just move in Malaysia or some shit.
I mean, but you know what? He wants to, this is all just like super psychological shit, but he wants to feel that adulation. And we all know for a fact, he does not care about motherfuckers in West Virginia. He does not. He liked to walk around New York City, even though he had an entourage and security, whatever, and feel like he was amongst his people. Like to hang out in those New York circles. Like to hang out with Chuck Schumer and Hillary Clinton, and because he could just give them a couple dollars for them to do a little bit of what he wants and they'll stay off his ass. You know, so that was that quid pro quo. And that was just dealing with those elite circles where they really don't even care about too much. They're not bound by the same moral principles and day-to-day just trying to live like most people.
I think that in capitalism, encapsulates it a little bit there.
Yeah, so
it's not bound by the same moral principles.
Yeah, I mean, so
as you and I,
he doesn't have that anymore, though. The city hates him. New York City. I mean, I guess Staten Island aside, and Southwest Brooklyn aside,
he's gonna
move to Staten Island.
He's a king of Staten Island. He's been making a fiefdom and shit. He's like, yo, I'm here now.
He has all the police and firefighters
about him. Yo, was it a happy? Is that how New York's finally going to get rid of Staten Island and cede it to Trump?
We'll take Jersey City, so take Jersey City.
It's just like, as a fucking trade, it's like, listen, we're going to cede the independent kingdom, Staten Island, and its royal family. He'll never have that shit, though. He'll be like fucking Napoleon on the island of Elba. He should just exile.
Right.
You know. Try to escape.
That's his only move, son. But, man, but city hates him.
Give him Governor's Island or some shit.
He can have Governor's Island. But that, if you have that such ill will and you have legitimate things that are common knowledge that people know, like, you're just full of it and you have, like, you've committed tons of fraud, you haven't released your tax returns because you're really not worth $1 billion. It's like, okay. All right, we'll see. Okay. Like people are waiting, son. Even the Democrats, if they take the House, like, they waiting, man. They got the whole list of subpoenas and shit they about to run out. Like, day one, January, whatever the fuck day it is, January 21st is just going to be lit. It's going to be all this shit because he's super fraudulent.
Well, I mean, shout out to that eventual utopia where all the... the legal ramifications come down.
I mean, utopia. I wouldn't use utopia.
It's give us the opposite of our regular dystopia. Okay. I know it's not that positive. Okay. I'm just, you know.
All right. Just mixing up the pot.
Mixing it up, man. Well, it's been another excellent Send the Link. As we've gone into all the potentialities of positive things that can happen, but also our current state.
Man, man. Don't stick your neck out too far if you did some shit.
Don't do it. So if you're in Florida and you're ready, please go out there and get ready to vote. It's November. Get
ready to vote and flip over the ballot. People be sleeping on the back.
The back. That's where the props are.
That's where the props are.
So please do that. Be wary of and read up this article on Donald Trump in the New York Times. It's a great article. David Barstow, Susanna Gregg, and Russ Buettner. Yeah, and try to enjoy your lives. Get out there and enjoy. Don't get caught in the dystopia.
Yeah, man. I mean, we all have our own autonomy. Nobody's controlling your steps. So, step into something good.
I don't like that. Positive. Well, it's been another Send a Link. I'm Brandon, and that's DJ.
I'm DJ, you're Brandon.
Indeed. Gonna look out. Always check us out on Twitter, the Apple Podcast app. And SoundCloud. And and check sendthelink.com. Sign up for the link and get them in your inbox.
For sure.
And we'll be back. Catch us next time. Enjoy the links.
Enjoy.